And welcome to the Endless Possibilities podcast. My name is Garrett, and today I'm joined by a very special guest, Jürgen Siever. Hi, Jürgen, how are you?
Hi, Garris. Nice to see you.
Good to see you
I'm
too.
very grateful for making contact with me after all these years.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a long journey getting you on the podcast, because I've been after you for so long. But I mean, it's today is the perfect time. Everything just aligned perfectly. So I'm just going to give a little intro about Jürgen, a little bit about his background, and then we'll let the conversation just go from there. So Jürgen began meditating at an early age, and at one point started having spontaneous experiences where he was fully self-aware in various non-physical dimensions. He has spent hundreds of hours exploring the non-physical in out-of-body experiences, which frequently lasted several hours at a time. In these experiences, Jürgen reports being as awake, or more so, as he was in waking consciousness, having full knowledge of his social identity and knowing whether his body was meditating or asleep during these experiences. Jürgen documents many experiences where he interviews discarnate individuals and visits higher dimensional realities, discussing the darkest places to the most illuminated regions of cosmic consciousness, and has also done work to map out the non-physical dimensions he has visited. So Jürgen is also the author of four books, The Multidimensional Man, The 10-Minute Moment, Vistas of Infinity, isn't it?
Yeah, Vistas of
Infinity. And your latest one is Elysium, right?
Yeah.
So Jürgen, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well,
and also just to let people know how I came across Jürgen. So it was about 2010, and I actually discussed this on last week's podcast. I had a woman called Casey Clare on, who Jürgen might know. And I came across this website called Astral Pulse. I had gotten really, really interested in the out-of-body phenomena. I had started having my own out-of-body experiences. And I just came across Jürgen's books. They had been posted on this website, and it was like a message form. And I befriended Jürgen on Facebook and actually followed a lot of his journey for a number of years. And then 5 years ago, I found myself in Lumley Castle in Newcastle, United Kingdom, at a Tom Campbell workshop or in an intensive. And I noticed that there was a gentleman sitting across the table from me who looked very familiar. And I asked him who he was. And then I realized I had been friends with him for over 10 years on Facebook. And it was Jürgen. And we had lots of amazing conversations and chats. So we found these great little corners around the castle, and we would sit chatting for hours. And then our friendship kind of moved from there onto a kind of an online. We've met a number of times. And Jürgen also wrote the foreword to my book. So Jürgen, thank you very much.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. It was a real pleasure to read, and I couldn't put it down. It was beautiful. Thank you, Jürgen, for allowing me to write the foreword. That was fantastic.
No. Thank you. Thank you for doing it. So Jürgen, we're going to have a great chat today. I mean, I've so many questions. I know quite a lot of your story. I've from some of our chats, and we'll get into all of that. But I mean, I guess we better start with just a small little introduction about you and what got you into spirituality and out of body phenomena.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, you can always look at these things always from a new angle, you know, as you grow older, you know. But recently I've given a seminar in Germany, in German, a three-day seminar. And of course, going through it, introducing yourself to this sort of brings a slightly different angle again, because you look at life always from a new position. But basically, nothing really. in substance has changed. I started meditating in 1969 after I left the army and started my art school training. But it started a lot earlier because I think it started when I was about 4 years old, where the question arose in a kid's brain, who does this body belong to? And kids, of course, they are so open and so inquisitive. And it actually made me cry that I couldn't work out whose body it was. There was a stage where you're not really fully developed your ego identification, so you're left sort of in the air. But 5 years later, my father died when I was 9 years old. And that was the first time I realized the illusion of life. Because when my father died and I saw him dying, he then came at night when I finally went to sleep. He came and said to me, "Tell everybody that I'm not dead. In fact, I'm in perfect health." And that went on for days, and I couldn't convince anybody, but I knew there was more to it. And so it never left me, until I, in my early 20s, I went to art school and I had this, experience. After about 3 years of meditation, I had a experience which I can only describe as one of enlightenment, because I described it in my book Multidimensional Man, because it was similar to my experience as a four-year-old. I was having a breakfast, big sandwich in one hand, when I suddenly dissociated from my hands and wondered who this person is who is eating. And then it cascaded into very quick succession into a state of disembodiment. I suddenly entered a luminous bright light, and it was like the words coming from nowhere saying, "Ah, there you are. There you are. Where have you been?" And then I became aware of this. I went through this ecstasy. Ecstasy. And with every ecstatic experience, I had a new insight into reality, until there was nothing there, nothing I could put into words or I could assign any attributes to. Okay, just an absolute. That's the only word I could find. And the other word I tried to play with was neutrality. It had no attributes. And that was it. And then that went on for quite a while. I mean, I suppose it was 20 minutes, half an hour, maybe at the most. And then when I came back, the bright daylight, which was 11 o'clock in the morning, turned into a dark night in comparison to where I just come out. It was like going back into the night. And that was it. That was the start of my life, really, because after that, I could not become a normal person again. What people would regard as normal, and finding an identity as, I remember I was at art school then. I went to art school. I didn't really know what I was doing there, there was no outside world. There was just it, an itness.
And that moment stayed with you, Jürgen.
It didn't stay. I was sort of keen to find my way back into my ego, because I felt I probably couldn't
Okay.
function. Okay,
Okay.
so it lasted for about 3 weeks, and then I gradually found my ego identity. Ah, I was an art student. I could do the painting. I found all these things rather than walking along the duck pond and thinking I could easily be a duck. There's no difference. And the thing is, of course, after that one significant thing happened, I was never alone again. I had an awareness of an invisible presence, and that never ever left me, you know. And I called it my silent companion. And this silent companion became my teacher, because it was such a benevolent, beautiful presence. It was almost as if somebody was walking alongside me, with me. And the moment I dived too much into my ego, like I became a bit obsessed with myself, or, you know, the moment something happened, I lost the connection and my silent companion disappeared. And I said, oh no, where's it gone? I'm lost. And then it taught me to be authentic. I couldn't get away with crap anymore. You know, the moment I entered into some crap, I lost the connection. I was on my own. I became lost, you know. And so this became my teacher, although I never really communicated with it in words, but just the presence, you know. And that was basically my life became. It was in Scotland many years later, in 2012, 13. I went to Scotland on a retreat. I then realized that my silent companion was me. You know, that was my real self.
And Jürgen, I remember actually following you. You wrote about this. So this was like a retreat by yourself in a log cabin, right? You went up and
Yes.
went into all by yourself, no phone, no connection to the outside world, and you stayed there for hell, a week, was it?
Just a week, but it was an intensive week. Meditation, that was totally in the present all the time. And I, of course, meditated with my eyes closed for about perhaps 6 hours, maybe 8 hours a day. Okay, but the moment I opened my eyes, I was still in the presence of the here and now, and everything was very, very alive. I could see things. I could see how nature worked, how everything was connected. When I walked in the forest, I could see that the moss was talking to the trees, and there was a connection, a continuity. When I listened to the birds, I could feel that the birds were actually chatting to each other, you know, and I could see colors. They were talking in colors and patterns. And this was this sort of heightened awareness where where I couldn't really associate words to my perception, like, oh, the birds were singing, la la la, and so on. I was just a perception of the reality behind it, you know, and that was what this meditation brought out.
I, Jürgen, so that sounds like it was like a unity consciousness experience where you're just one with everything. You can almost like put your attention on anything that you perceive or see, and you can actually feel and experience through that animal or tree or object. So that something happened during the retreat that was there a shift in consciousness?
Yes, there was another. I mean, I had these experience. I can count them on my hand, these sort of cosmic consciousness or enlightenment. Let's call it enlightenment because of the light intensity, you know. I had about one, two, three. In my life, I had a few afterwards, not to the same extensive intensity. But yes, these sort of came about in terms of ecstatic experiences, where you made an actual connection. But I mean, we all are already in unity consciousness. We just don't notice it.
We just don't know it.
We just distracted. And
Yeah.
that was one thing which I noticed in Scotland. I had a recall, of my true being, and that again went via an ecstatic experience, but it didn't strike me as anything unusual. It was just the natural state everybody is already in. It's just a recall. Okay, I
It's
don't
a
know whether,
remembrance. It's a remembrance. Yeah.
and of course I had this incredible experience where I went into the whole shebang with this sort of cosmic consciousness. For example, the first thing was I felt incredible pain, and the pain felt like the pain of the whole universe. I could feel the pain of every living thing. Okay, and it was very, very painful, very intense. And then afterwards, I felt the joy of every living thing, and then this whole thing came together. And before that, I had other experience. The night before, I had an experience which I outlined in my 10-minute moment book, where I was frightened out of my wits by God. I went into an abyss of reality, which was never ending. And I became more and more scared. And I thought, if I go one step further, I'm going to get annihilated, not just physically,
Okay.
so this sort of, and I call I when I wrote about it in my book, I called the chapter "The Terrifying Face of God."
Yeah.
I was totally scared out of my wits by this aspect that what happens next? If I cease to exist, where do I go? What happens? I had out of body experience and all sorts of kinds of, but this was a new experience to me. I thought, what happens? What happens with me? If I'm gobbled up by God. And
Yeah.
then, of course, I sort of raced out with my camera to take photographs to see if I could find an ego I could identify with. Okay, I was running around trying to find some sense of an ego. I said, oh, I want my ego back, I don't want this. So I thought, I'm a photographer now. That gives me something to hang on to, But then, of course, the following night, the whole thing sort of disappeared. And then the next day, I had this experience which we just talked about,
And this aspect of God, this was nothingness, right, Jürgen?
Sorry?
It was nothing. It was like the abyss. It was Brahman, the nothingness.
I
That's
couldn't
what it
get
was.
any name or anything. It was just fear.
Yeah.
Okay. It was I couldn't even get my head around it afterwards. It was just something that happened to me. But it was only the next day that the clarity came, of what it was. And then that was 2013, the silent companion revealed itself as being me. And then this incredible stillness set in. Incredible, beautiful stillness. Wherever I looked, I was surrounded by this incredible peace, and the beauty of everything, and the privilege of being alive. And being sort of told, yes, this is my gift to you, to be alive, you know.
And Jürgen, was there an intelligence communicating these stages to you as you were going through them?
It was just knowing. There
Knowing, knowing.
was no communication. It was just a full awareness of what it was. There was nothing telling me because I already knew. I was literally one, as you often talk about, you know. But as we talked earlier, I mean, of course, we are not just divine consciousness. We are physical bodies. We have got emotions. We have got a mind which thinks, which considers. And all these things we are, and of course we have to be that, you know, for various reasons, but it is supported by something which is permanent, you know, which is always there, and you can rely on it. It's never going away, even if you get the scare of your life. You know, as you well know, it is still there,
It's
you know.
always there. And that's the silent companion, right?
So this doesn't go away, but of course it also, what I noticed, there's always a, you never stop learning, okay? Everything goes on, and you're always at the beginning of something new, you know. There are no repeats. Everything is new every day, you know. There's always a new beginning. And of course, I found consciousness goes into different layers. And I had another experience. Just try to work it out. In 2017, I went to a monastery in Mount Athos, and I think I'm going to write a book about it because it was so
This
profound.
is Greece. This is in Greece, isn't it? With the Orthodox Church. Yeah,
Yeah,
I'd love to hear about this, Jürgen.
Mount Athos. Yeah, this is where I suddenly was confronted with these Catholic saints, and I'm not a Christian. I'm not a Catholic. I'm not even a Christian. Okay, but I met these monks, and a friend of mine, he had a Muslim father and a Catholic mother, and he was a meditator, and his guru was a Sikh. Very, very, yeah, fantastic bloke. We became really good friends, you know. His background is Maasai warrior. Okay, he came from Tanzania. Very, very good friend of mine. So we went on this pilgrimage together, and it was just joy being in the presence of a guy like that, with such background. Anyway, we went to this monastery. That was a whole adventure in itself, how we got there, you know. But we made friends with a monk, and the monk was originally a Buddhist monk, okay, and he went to Mount Athos and became a Christian monk, okay, and we had fantastic dialogues. He was so deep and so enlightened. I couldn't find another word about him. He had such wisdom, you know. Anyway, he said, "Look, Jürgen, why don't you have a look in these chapels at the icons?" Okay. And I was talking about it. I really like to see some of your icons because they're fantastic. You know, these icons are painted by monks where every brush stroke is a prayer. It's a kind of meditation. So they're quite powerful things. So I said, "Oh yeah, I'd love to see one of these icons, you know." And he made it clear that these chapels, they're only for ordained monks. You know, you can't just go in there and take pictures and things, you know. You have to go there with an ordained monk into these chapels. And he sat me on this chair, and it was quite dark. He sat me in front of this icon, which was sort of quite small, and it was of the Virgin Mary with a child. And then he lowered a chandelier so I could see it. And this is where I had the most incredible experience. You know, I can't even begin to describe it, but what happened was my consciousness shifted, you know, and there was a divine presence of the feminine,
So the Divine Mother, yeah.
which I never experienced before, you know. And yeah, and that then of course the monk and my friend, they left me to it. They went out because I started sort of almost having a, you know, sort of kind of emotional reaction to it. And then they came back, I said, I thanked him, you know, I said, that was really beautiful. And then he said, oh, I would like to show you another picture. And my first reaction was, oh, no, you know, that was. He said, no, you have to see, we have got the relics of a Saint Anastasia in this chapel. And I want you to see this and experience it and tell me about it, you know.
So Jürgen, did this monk, did he know your abilities, right? Because not also have one of the things that I really loved about you is, right, you can kind of communicate from the awakening side of consciousness, right? The levels of enlightenment, but you're also an out-of-body explorer, right? So it's like you did he know that you had these abilities? Did he know anything about you in the conversations? And
Yes,
he wanted you to, yeah.
we talked for about a couple of days, and we exchanged
Okay.
notes. He knew all about out-of-body experience. That was a gift
Okay.
to him. He was there, you know. He knew when we also he was a Buddhist before, you know. He knew all the things there. James, my friend, they were just like two brothers, you know. And James had experiences there which he didn't even want to talk about. He only indicated things. And by the way, he disappeared in 2021 after we had a short conversation. And he said, I'm going. He told me that there will be a war between NATO and Russia. That was in June 21. And he said, I've got to go. Okay. And then he disappeared, and I know he would have gone into a monastery, because these monks, it is said that these monks are there praying for the world not to disintegrate or
Okay.
something. They're there on their mountain to
Yep.
pray, and I mean they really pray, these guys. And I went to one prayer, which started at 4 in the morning and ended at 8 in the morning, which was 4 hours. Okay, I couldn't sit that long on this hard bench. And they were
Yeah.
chanting and singing, you know. And then we went, I joined them again for breakfast after the prayer because I was hungry. And we had porridge and wine for breakfast.
Wine for breakfast.
Yeah. And you know, that was a really interesting experience. So
Yeah.
yeah, so this was this made a big impact on my life. And of course, what happened there was like an initiation into love. Okay. This sort of divine mother, as you mentioned, the love aspect that I didn't really have that. after Scotland. It was just stillness. But this thing that, I can, I'm going to write more about it when I do my new book because it was on so many levels,
Yeah. So let's get back to Anastasia.
Yes. Yes, I might as well spill it because I went into this. He took me into this other monastery. There were two chapels. One was for the Virgin Mary, the other one was for Anastasia. And I went in there, and the monk came with me, and he did the same ritual. He sat me down, and the chandelier came down, the picture happened, and almost the identical experience repeated itself. This incredible presence of the feminine power, and I had this experience again when I went on another retreat back in 21 to Devon. I rented an old fishing hut to be on my own to meditate. I had an inner experience of the Divine Mother again through meditation. Okay, similar experience, but not triggered by an icon. Okay, just a meditation. Yeah, and this one was so intense. I couldn't sleep the following night. I was just so overwhelmed. And the next day, and then when I came out of the chapel, the monk gave me a postcard of the icon, and I've still got it here.
Actually, I have you sent me a photograph of it, and I still have the photograph saved.
Oh, right. Okay. So
Yeah.
you see, the thing is, I never really paid much attention to this Catholic iconography. To me, they were just paintings.
Yeah.
Okay. But that changed everything. So then the next morning, I went with a postcard clutched in my hands, and I said, I tried to get into the chapel, but it was locked. And then a monk came and said, "Oh no, you can't go in there," and he was sort of getting quite cross with me. And I didn't speak any Greek. I just pointed at the picture and said, I want to pray, and things like that. And he said, No, go away." And then suddenly a window opened in the monastery, and somebody leaned out and burst out laughing. And then he talked to these guys down there in the courtyard, these other monks, and they all started laughing, And then the one monk came. The word must have gone out, what had happened. And one monk came, sort of put his arm around me and sort of opened the chapel, and sort of pushed me inside almost. And then I was meditating in front of this icon for about an hour. Nothing happened. Until after about an hour, I felt a very, very powerful presence. And I recognized her. And she said to me, "Jürgen, I'm not dead."
So, Jürgen, do we want to give the listeners and the viewers a little bit of background on who Saint Anastasia is?
Yes, she was a young woman in the 300s. Okay, she was a nun, a Christian nun, and what happened was she was persecuted like so many Christians at that time, and she was tortured by these Romans.
Romans, wasn't it? They gave her an awful death,
Yeah,
yeah.
they gave her a really hard time, like they did to all these
Yeah.
people, and they tortured her in the most brutal way.
Yeah.
I don't even want to mention what they did.
Yeah. I read up on it. Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing was that she, while they were torturing her, she prayed for her torturers,
Yeah.
asked God for forgiveness of what they were doing. Okay, and then she died as a result of it. But she knew exactly that what they did to her, they did to God. Because there was no, there was, she was a pure channel.
Yeah.
Okay. They couldn't torture her. They had a direct link to God. Okay. And she knew that. She knew that was a terrible thing they would do to this pure energy. And there's no way that it wouldn't have any consequences, you know. And so she prayed for forgiveness. She knew what would happen to them as a result of it. And then her body was cast aside into a ditch, and it didn't, after weeks, it had no sign of decomposing. And then her friends, the other nuns, came to look after her, and then found her a place. And hence the relics of her body became very sort of famous, you know, and they were sent around to different places, and then they ended up in Mount Athos again. Okay, so there was this sort of deep significance of this incredible spirit of this amazing woman. And
And Jürgen, the rays of consciousness where they somehow stayed in the clothes and the belongings, and then these people then took the relics and you put them in various different churches and stuff.
yes, that's right. I mean, you have to see it like that. The body, the physical body, we are basically anchors of the physical world. You
Yeah.
know, we are like a conduit in a way, you know. I never really thought much about this idea of relics. To me, they were just sort of things like dead bones and ashes and things like that. Had no
Yeah.
spiritual significance. But the thing is, of course, is what people make of it as well. And of course, at one point, there was an intimate connection to the purest consciousness, you know. So they were sort of already pure, you know. So
So
I think that's,
transmission-wise, so they would go in and sit in these little small churches and connect to that saint's transmission, her
And
presence, her yeah.
they did this via the icon that was painted by the monk. You know,
Yeah.
so the icon was there, and people sort of created this connection with a prayer, you know, and felt it, of course, because I could feel her, and I couldn't let it go, because when I came back, I only had to think about her, and I felt her presence, you
Yeah.
know, as if
Yeah.
there was somebody in the room, and I talked to her, you know, like an old friend, and
So tell us, let's go back to when she appeared in the church. She took you somewhere, right?
Well, the thing was, she was basically a presence without a body. Okay, I didn't see her with my eyes,
Mm.
but I felt her presence, you know.
Yeah.
Then, when I got back it lasted for about 6 months, I meditated, always sort of thought about her. And then one day I said to her, "Look, why don't you invite me to your place in heaven, wherever you are?" You know, through an out-of-body experience. "Can I come and see you where you live?" You know. And so I started meditating and hoping that she would take me into a place, give me an invite. And I suddenly went into this incredibly horrible slum. You know, it was a dark, really miserable place, a slum, this abject poverty and sickness. And I was so shocked. I said, "Why are you doing this to me? You know, I asked you to take me to your home." And she very clearly said, "My home is where I'm needed most, you know." And that was the message I got, you know. So she was a perfect bodhisattva, you know. And
And was
that's.
this an earthly realm or an astral realm, Jürgen, that she was taking
I
you
was
to?
meditating, and it was, I didn't have an out of body experience. I was just suddenly there. It's my awareness was there, you know. It was not an out of body experience. It was just a feeling of the environment and feeling the pain and everything very clearly, you know. Anyway, these out of body experiences changed over time.
And I'm just wondering, because she obviously incarnated at that time, and it was probably a lot of darkness, especially with the Romans and the persecutions of all the Catholics. So when she died, she said that she was still here, right? She didn't die, right? Her physical form died, but she was still here. So on what capacity was she working? Was she still here on the earth working with people or in other realms?
Well, what I understood when I communicated with her and became aware of her presence, she wasn't in any place. She was just pure awareness. Okay,
Okay.
like if you, I don't know whether you've tried it. If you focus on Ramana Maharshi, you know, if you do that, you've become aware of his presence, and it's everywhere. Okay, and that was my experience of her. She could easily manifest, I believe, on any level,
Yeah.
physically, on any astral level. But her was a living presence, like Ramana Maharshi. And Ramana Maharshi, I only have to think of him to get an understanding. Some people use
Yeah.
Jesus. You know, Jesus is another one of these incredible avatars. With just
Yes.
presence, okay? And the silent companion is the same thing. Some people have an awareness of an angel, you know, they say, my guardian angel. But it's the same thing, it's an awareness of this incredible
It's
presence.
funny, about 2 or 3 years ago, Jürgen, I was listening to an audiobook. I can't remember which audiobook it was, but and I would do this just, it's not, the audiobooks for me were more of a just something to listen to while I was going to sleep, or if I couldn't sleep in the morning times. And this one morning I was listening to the audiobook, and the author, he started speaking about Saint Bridget, who's an Irish saint. And all of a sudden, I felt this presence and I could feel her. She came in, she was all around me. And I was like, oh my. And she was there for like 10 minutes, right? And then disappeared. I was like, wow. I was there. I wonder, was that really her, right? And about 5 minutes later, I got a message from my mum and dad who were in Spain, and they had taken a photograph of themselves. And in the background, there was a sign saying Saint Bridget, on the back. And I was like, it was complete confirmation that that was her. She still exists, and that's something I'm interested in. So, and I know this is an ongoing kind of thing where people will say that these beings, are they really still hanging around in their same form, or they're doing the same job that they were assigned? So you feel that they do, Jürgen? They still.
I absolutely do, but I mean, I noticed it with my mother, for example. I met her many, many times after she died, and she would come to me in a different body, okay? And she made fun of me, for example, once she appeared with her sister as a very trendy-looking teenager. And the only way I recognized her was when we hugged. I could feel mother essence, you know, how I knew. So it doesn't really matter. The individual exterior may change, but you recognize the essence of the person. That doesn't go
It's
away.
like an energy signature.
Yeah, and the individuality of that person, okay, they don't lose their individuality. They have got this individualities maybe over a million years in their own particular spiritual unique way, and that doesn't go away, you know. And the love is still there. I met people during my out-of-body experiences, old friends who have no body here on the physical earth. But when I met them, that was one particular event when I went to the retreat in 21 in Devon. I said, "Where are my friends?" You know, and then suddenly these two people came, and one was a really good friend, a bloke, but he was right in my heart. Okay, there was no outside of him, and it was such a closeness. And then another friend, she was in my heart. This is where I felt her, right here. Okay, and incredible closer. And then she ran off over the fields in a beautiful dress, skipping along, laughing, singing through this field of flowers. And this love was still there. So that was simply during meditation. I asked, "Where are my friends?" Okay, and they weren't here on this physical earth, but they were still there, and I recognized them, and I recognize the intimacy. So it's a beautiful, beautiful thing, life. Okay, life doesn't go away. Okay, no matter what we believe. Okay, and I mean, there are things sometimes you can bring this spiritual aspect, these individuals into your being. For example, one person, a friend of mine, a Facebook friend of mine, I said, "I'm going to," that was in 2015, I said, "I'm going on a retreat to write Vistas of Infinity." Okay. And he said, "Oh, why don't you take a book with you?" I said, "What kind of book would you recommend?" He said, "There's a book by Saint Saint Teresa of Avila, a Spanish saint." He said, "The book is called The Interior Castle. Take this with you and read it." So I ordered the book, and I took it with me and started reading. And the 1 week where I was supposed to be writing my book, I was at like a little sort of room there in this fisherman's hat. And I was reading and writing and meditating, and there was no difference between day and night. It was just an ongoing process, writing, reading, meditating. I didn't know what time of day it was. It was just a continuous thing. And suddenly Teresa, Saint Teresa, she was, as I was reading, she was sitting so next to me. I had this feeling of her presence, okay, and this incredible love, you know, that was there. And so these things are realities once we open our inner channels, you know, because we are so fixed on the outside world, our senses. But when you meditate, you know, you're going into a different state. And your world becomes much bigger, much vaster, and you then wake up to the greater reality of what it is, you know, what it's all about. And then, of course, it has to be carried by love. You know, you cannot do this without being overwhelmed by love. Okay, because that is the essence of it all. And when this takes place after you do meditation, then you know, you start the day with appreciation of life, you know, this sort of this love, you know, there's nothing else really that comes anywhere close to it.
I mean, Jürgen, listening to you talking about this, I feel like a school kid, you know, when you're talking about love. And it seems to be missed by so many. I mean, I'm not knocking any of these, you know, but a lot of the non-dual, this netty, everything is just awareness. They seem to be lacking this part, right? This love, this motherly quality to it. And for me, and I, look, I've gone through a lot of the different stages of awakening. And yes, there are stages where it's netty netty, you know, not this, not that. Everything is just awareness. But I've come back into that place of love, right? Just caring, compassion. And it's so much better. It's like this is what it's about. This is almost like the fuel that's fueling the drive of the universe, right? It's love.
It's the fuel of the soul, the fuel of the universe, the fuel of life. And people, I came across these people, I had discussions with them, and then they talk about these sort of, you know, the non-duality, and there's a sort of, sometimes there's a coldness, you know. And I just wondered, one guy I want to ask you, what would you say to a woman in Africa who is holding a starving child in her arm who doesn't stop crying? What would you say to this woman? Would you say it's all an illusion? Okay. I mean, if you don't have any love, you're not alive. You know, if you can't feel compassion, if you can't take this woman in your arms and say to her, I will do everything in my power to make sure that this baby of yours survives. Okay? And not this rubbish saying, oh, that's an illusion. You know, I think these people have no heart. And I've come across people like that who argue with me, who called me an egomaniac and whatever when I started talking about love, you know. And things. They didn't want to have anything to do with it. I mean, come on, what's your life worth? You know, what distinguishes you from a pondweed? You know.
It's so true. And I do understand, Jürgen. This is a journey, right? And it's a remembering, right? It's consciousness, firstly awaking up through our physical forms and then retracing its steps back to where it came from, right? The ocean. And at certain stages along that journey, yes, it is non-dual, right? What we are at the center is non-dual, right? But yet here we are in the world, having relationships, having intimate moments, conversations, witnessing tragic events, you know, and being human, and you know, shedding tears. I just told you that 2 weeks ago, I had to carry my child into an ambulance, you know, and I had tears rolling down my face, and all that netty netty stuff just went out the window, you know, when it's your child or somebody needs your help.
Absolutely. You see, that's an important thing to realize. I mean, there's so much talk about, for example, going through changes. You know, there's a lot of, we are going through a tremendous change at the moment. There's, every materialist knows that we are going through a massive change. But of course, this is change. Everybody's affected by it, okay? Because it's not just a change, because our economic system goes through a cataclysmic change out of necessity. I mean, terrible things happen, but it is experience on an individual level. People are affected. Some people don't want to think about it. They start crying when they think about, you know, we wiped out half of the species on Earth already, you know, and stuff like that. They see things like this, sort of young kids who are 10 years old now, or younger or older, they are afraid, okay? They wonder what's going to happen to us, okay? And I see the only thing that can happen to people is to become aware of reality of now, of the presence, okay, which is cradling us, which is there all the time. Not about, the fear, not about the worry and what is to become of us, but to become aware of the presence of this incredible, intimate love which surrounds us all the time. And that is where the changes take place. And that's the only thing that will take us out of this old, hardened, materialism, which sort of made us bitter and cling to things for dear life. This is going to go because
This
it
is
just,
changing, definitely.
So this is, so anybody who's afraid about the change, I would say, yeah, it's beautiful. Just open yourself to this love, to this presence of love. And the changes that will take place will be beautiful changes. So we don't have to worry about our children when they grow up, because it will be a completely different reality for them. And it's had to come to an end, and it had to go through this terrible things that are going on, in order to clear it all out. And so I always say to young kids, and I've got a grandson, I think, oh, it's so exciting what you're going to experience when you grow up. This will be like the dark ages, And so I feel excited for them, And also because once you are in the presence of this love, you know where the path is leading us. It's beautiful. So I'm positive.
Beautiful. And your grandkids are very lucky to have you around to teach them this as well.
It's beautiful, I've only got a grandson one,
Oh,
but
okay.
they're beautiful. These kids I associate as friends with them. They're beautiful children, and I feel positive for these things. I had it when I went to Scotland. I could see, I had a glimpse into the future, and I didn't see anything what people are afraid of,
Okay, so I guess we've spoke about all the stages revealing themselves, right? The cosmic consciousness, unity consciousness, what I would call Brahman, that no-thingness, and then what sounds like the merger with the Divine Mother, right, came in and brought back the love. So, but I guess, right, and you wrote a book called Multidimensional Man, right? And we are multidimensional. And you also have the ability to be able to shift your awareness from this reality into different realities. And you can travel. You've talked about seeing the future. You've probably gone into the past realms and shifted into different astral realms. Can we talk a little bit about that, Jürgen, and like how that all started, and is it an ongoing process? Is that still happening? Is it something you actively engage in?
Yes, no, I don't actively engage in it. It doesn't even interest me, to be honest. I do have spontaneous out-of-body experiences, and when they do happen, either during meditation or spontaneously in the morning, when I get up and then go back to bed and meditate, they happen spontaneously, and they are each one a unique experience. And they are new, and I always make notes because they always tell me something. I mean, but there's another layer to it, and it's got to do with unity consciousness. Okay, that is a prevailing state that doesn't go away. And when I close my eyes, I call it, I see a silver world, it's a light world of
I
light.
experienced that as well, Jürgen. When my eyes are closed, it's a silvery, almost like mother of pearl, the inside of a shell. That's what my consciousness is.
Yes, that's right. Very well described. You know, it's this sort of this wideness, this beautiful, and then my attention, I can send my attention to various other layers. I can, for example, think about, I can conjure up a picture of a landscape, and I can walk through it quite easily without leaving my body. And I
And do
sometimes,
you create this, or is this an actual
yes,
reality?
it's already there. Okay,
Okay.
it surprises me. I don't have to invent anything. It surprises me when I walk along there. Okay, and it's basically a reality which is already there. And I mean, some people say, "Oh, well, you're an artist," you know. And I've been a very visual person all my life. I mean, I could easily imagine things. But it's a bit like when people have a, what do you call it, hypnagogic state, and they go into a hypnagogic state after, before they go to sleep or just after awakening. If you follow the hypnagogia, the images, you know, they suddenly appear, and then they evolve. And some people use them as a wake and use lucid dream, where you just follow it, and then the picture becomes 3D, and you enter into it, you know. But it's not something you imagine anymore. It's just something you which appears, which you're there, and then you can walk along there, and it's a totally different. It's not something that you can easily imagine,
Yeah,
because.
and yeah, sorry, Jürgen, go ahead.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's already, the realities are there.
So I did a little bit of this as well. So what got me interested in spirituality was all of this sort of out of body phenomena. And I started having these experiences, and I was trying everything. And some of the exercises were imaginary based, where you would start to imagine yourself walking through a park, meeting someone on a bench, having a conversation with them, and you're actually making it up, right, in your mind's eye. And then all of a sudden, the imagination has been replaced by a moving, interactive daydream that just kind of evolves by itself. It's been replaced. Your imagination has now been replaced with a new data stream or a data stream,
Yeah.
and it just starts moving. And the
Yeah.
people start talking back to you, like, and it's a conversation. It's back and forward. They can tell you things. So, I mean, to say that it's just imagination, well, I mean, it all starts with our imagination, right? Our minds are what start these.
That's right. You know, I mean, the thing is that I don't even know where to begin. When you look at the incredible complexity of what can happen, I mean, and the data, that's a, for, Tom Campbell always talks about the database of the universe, which is literally, I mean, I had an out-of-body experience where I went into a, saw people, and they were driving these 1920s Bentleys. It was a Bentley. And I touched it, and it felt so real. And then I looked closer, and I could see these micro scratches, which only happen when you polish a car, you know. And
Incredible, incredible.
it leaves these microscopic scratches. And I think, you can't possibly imagine that, you know. And it's already there. You know, the reality brings it perhaps all together into your focus, but we live in an incredibly multiplex cinema, you know, where which can have millions of projectors, which it's wonderful. It's unimaginable how
And
reality.
Jürgen, some of these out-of-body states, they are realer than this reality, right? Because everything looks super high definition, extra vibrant. There's more detail in them, exactly like what you just explained. I mean, I've projected out a number number of times, and I would like look at plants and trees, and the trees have like the flowers have like lights coming out of them that we don't see with our eyes in this reality. You know,
The sort
everything's glowing.
of presence, yeah, there's which is it's just incredible. Because I mean, I posted on my Facebook page a few weeks ago. How do we know we are not dead? That was the theme, you know. How do we know we are not dead? Because I had an experience where I was waking up in my local greengrocer. Okay, and I said, "Oh, that's my greengrocer, my local greengrocer." And then I realized, "Oh, it's an out-of-body experience." Okay, so I got really excited, and I sort of packed some bananas into my bag, my shopping bag. I got really carried away, and then I walked down the road, and it looked very familiar. I thought, "Oh, if I go a bit further, I find the road where my house is." But then things changed. Suddenly there was a river, and I climbed on the river bank. And then I thought, oh, maybe now is the time to go back to normal life. Okay. And I tried to open my eyes. And as I opened my eyes, I was in a different place. But it wasn't the physical place. I said, oh, it's strange. You know, it's the same sort of thing you do when you want to change your locality and doing an out-of-body experience. You can either spin around, or you can open your eyes again, or do whatever you like, and you shift reality. And then I said, oh, that's really strange, you know. And then I said, okay, I'm going to wake up now. Okay. I opened my eyes. I thought I opened my physical eyes, and I was standing in the kitchen of a friend of mine. And in front of me was an Asahi Pentax camera. He was a photographer. And he showed me his camera sort of 40 years ago. And I started talking to him. Okay. And he said, oh, by the way, I've now taken you up on the idea of having a virtual reality headset. And he showed it to me. You know, and I looked into it, and I said, hang on a minute, you know, that's getting a little bit ridiculous. You know, maybe I'm dead. Okay, and I can't wake up. You know, I just shift reality. I wasn't scared because one reality is as good as the next one. And then finally, I opened my eyes and I was in my bed. I could see the sheets. But every place I had been until then was as real, if not more real, than the one I came back to.
So I mean, okay. So a lot of people, when they die, right? A lot of people are in a state of confusion, panic, fear at the moment of death, right? And from my understanding is that when they pass over, they're still in their form, right? They have a body, a replica of their physical form that separates, right? Because I've been in the out of body state and I've looked and my hands look the same and I looked in the mirror even one time. And I'm still me, right? I still have my memory. I know who I am, what I do. So, and these people, some of them actually don't know they're dead. They get stuck in these loops. Based on beliefs and addictions, and they hang around, and this is how we get the whole thing of like ghosts hanging around houses, haunted houses. It's most likely somebody who's passed, who doesn't know they're dead, and they're just hanging on for some reason.
Yes, there's a film which says a million ways to die in the West, you know, the comedy film, you know, but there are literally a million ways to die. And it could be anything, you know. For example, there's always a reference made from people who had near-death experience. Now, a near-death experience is a very specific way of dying, you know, that has nothing to, well, very little to do with an out-of-body experience. First of all, these people, these near-death experience are almost 100% introduced via trauma. Okay, they usually experience a trauma, and that alerts certain mechanics in the body or in the brain or in the mind and the spirit body. It triggers off certain things, certain experiences. So very often they go through similar sort of experiences, which you don't have when you go through an out-of-body experience. You don't have a past life reveal, for example. You don't have these. You don't have these things, and of course there are different ways of having an out-of-body experience. For example, there's only one stage where you can see your body when you have an out-of-body experience, and that's via the etheric body. The etheric body has still got all the physical sensibilities, and that's the only time. Once you pass through the tunnel, or once you sort of go to the astral plane, there's no way you can look at your bed, but you won't see your body. Okay, because it's just, that took me ages to figure that out. What's going on here, So there's a lot to learn and to absorb when you talk about out-of-body states.
And you can phase as well, right? In meditation, you can actually phase your consciousness into a different reality, right? And sort of be a disembodied awareness that's able to view, but there's no, you don't have a form, right? You're just like an observer.
That's the other thing. There's so many different ways of perception.
And you do a lot of them, right? You do both. And then from the dream realm as well.
Yes, I have. I mean, it's not something I do regularly. There's sometimes a sort of 3 4 months gap. Sometimes
Okay.
I've got several in a week. I'm not seeking them, by the way. I'm not
Yeah,
really.
they just happen.
They're just things which happen, but I take note when they happen because they're interesting, and they tell you something else about reality. And I like to sort of keep a book on reality because we are tend to have a rather limited picture. That's why I did this book here. I wanted to be a little bit more specific and remind people there's a lot more to it than just being a ghost, walking around in a white sheet through a castle,
And Jürgen, you do something a little bit different in the out of body state. You meditate and you've done like kind of chanting of Om. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because I found that fascinating, one of the experiences you had.
That is a very thing. I almost feel it's almost a waste of an out-of-body experience if you don't meditate.
Okay.
Because the reason is, and I think that's why the Buddhists they've formed this sort of dream yoga. They call it dream yoga. It's basically you have an out-of-body experience and you meditate. Okay, and the reason for that is basically you don't have to overcome the gravity of the physical awareness. Okay, it's like I always compare to launching a rocket from space, which doesn't
No, the
have
gravitational pull,
the gravity to overcome the gravity. It goes straight off, and the power can be overwhelming. Sometimes I only have to chant it once, and I use the Om mantra, and it never really. Until that, I never really paid a lot of attention to the Om. I thought, oh, well, it's just one of those mantras. But I use it not nearly every time now. You can use other mantras. Okay, they may work just as well. But sometimes I only have to chant it once, Om, and the whole world around me starts vibrating and shaking, and people running away. When I'm in industrial environment, it's such a powerful effect that people run away, and I've done it in a marketplace. I suddenly went, oh, and the whole environment started shaking. And then, but on other occasions, it doesn't work. I chant it, and I just sort of hover in the air a bit. And then hang on a minute, Om, and I do it again. I'm not taking off. And I notice that if there are aspects in your psyche which you haven't really dealt with, okay, no matter how much you chant, you have got to deal with these sort of energies first. Okay, it's like when you are not in a good state of mind and you want to meditate, but you've got lots of other thoughts going on. You know, it's not really working. You know, you have to let go, you know, and do that, do your thing there. Yeah, but it does, if you are in the spirit already, you know. You get a direct connection to higher consciousness, and it can come in the most beautiful ways, you know. And it's always different, you know. At one time, I went up, and the clouds opened, the sky opened, and I was showered with millions of rose petals. Okay, and each rose petal was a blessing. Okay, and sometimes a choir of 1,000 angels sort of start singing and welcoming me. And I thought, oh, well, that can't be real. Where do all these angels come from? You know, because why would they want anything to do with me? You know, but it's consciousness, okay? And it's infinitely rich. Okay, we can't put any limitations on it.
So what you would say is that there's a choir of angels for everybody who when they reach these states or pass on, they'll be welcomed by whatever consciousness wants to greet them with, right?
There is this incredible awareness. Anybody, you know, who breaks through this barrier, they are welcome with open arms. Yeah, you know, they are already the joy is overwhelming for all the spirit world. The joy to make this connection is overwhelming, and they really show it. Okay.
And Jürgen, are we encouraged to get into these states of consciousness and move into these he heavenly realms? Is that something they want? Are they want to encourage us to do this, or are they just quite happy leaving us here in our 3D earthly prison?
No, I think what happens when you get back to your roots, when you make the connection from your physical self, okay, which is basically exiled awareness, which has lost its connection, you know. But it's not a real experience in as much. It's you're separated where there shouldn't be a separation. Okay, because you always have been and you always are unity consciousness, whether you know it or not. But when you suddenly make the connection completely, and your illusion of being separated from it dissipates, then you're coming home. But this homecoming is a very momentous event, because what happens then? You are actually empowering the whole of creation. Okay, so what you're doing is you become a conduit. Okay, it's the job you're doing. Okay, with your people, you know, you become a conduit, and you're doing this sort of energy. And it doesn't matter whether you do it Shaktipat, or whether you do healing, or write music. You know, it doesn't matter, but you become a conduit, you know, and this is a very beautiful fulfillment of the destiny of consciousness. You know, you're breaking the cycle.
So I guess you just kind of you quickly brushed over their music. So I guess like people like Mozart were channeling celestial music, right? That there was no way they were just with their intellectual minds coming up with these
And imagine how much good they do, how many people
Incredible.
concert and they sort of come out of it and they smile,
Yeah.
feel this sort of
Yeah.
incredible connection suddenly. And there are lots of people who do things like that. I mean, sometimes you go to the shops and there's a woman at the checkout, and all she does, she smiles at you. Or no other, she may not even be really aware of it, but there's something inside her which radiates it, and she gives you
Yeah.
something, and you walk away and say, "Oh, that was a nice woman,
Yeah.
person,
Yeah.
And so things like that. We do that when we connect it to our unity consciousness.
Yes. Yes. And Jürgen, there's one or two more things I want to get to quickly. So you never had a teacher, right? You all of this just sort of unfolded spontaneously in different stages, but you did kind of work with a teacher in the astral realms, right? I remember you telling me about a Chinese teacher or an Oriental teacher who would turn up,
Yes,
and communicate with you.
I did have, I did when I was young, in my 20s, I did sort of follow certain individuals, but it ne
You
I,
did TM, right?
yeah, I did,
Early on, you did it.
TM, but I didn't really feel Maharishi was a teacher or something like that. I was sort of divorced. I read books by Krishnamurti and Aurobindo, and they meant a lot to me. And
Yeah.
so on, but I didn't feel they were my teachers. Okay, they were teachers, obviously. I internalized their teaching. I mean, Krishnamurti, he is a very powerful teacher, of course, but the teaching began when I had this out-of-body experience and met this Chinese man during an out-of-body experience. And that was a real connection, and I remember when I sort of crouched before him in this sort of humble way, and he was lying there casually on his side and laughed at me, and then without changing his position, as I was kneeling in front of him, he started massaging my chest with his foot. And I thought, oh God, that's really embarrassing. What if somebody sees us, he was massaging my chest with his foot, and he just sort of grinned at me, and talked while he was doing it, gave me riddles. So, and then I had this incredible burning in my chest for weeks afterwards, and all he did was he opened my heart chakra.
Okay.
This thing, and this, and he, I kept meeting him. And he wasn't always the sort of nicest person. He would put me through some really gruesome tests where I was sort of having to avoid spears coming towards me and stuff like that, and deal with fear and
Yeah.
drowning, and lots of things he sort of put me through. And then in the end, he taught me via metaphors, symbols. Our language was non-verbal then, and that lasted for a few years until I then was, during an out-of-body experience in 1980, I was taken through the different levels of consciousness into another one of these higher states, and I always felt the sort of presence, the silent companion. That was my teacher, but that was a link. He literally took me into these levels without me actually seeing him, just feeling him.
So you could feel his energetic signature, right? And he was communicating in like data packets, was it? So you would just get these sentences kind of coming in, and you would internalize them.
It was more like, when you're in deep meditation, you get, I call it the knowing field. There are no thoughts, you just know things. Okay.
Yeah.
It's just knowing. You don't have to think about it. They're not thoughts, they're not sentences, they're just knowing. And it's this kind of thing when he sends me a when he sent me a symbol, you know, a bit like a sort of crop circle, if you like, you know, something like that. I couldn't interpret it with words, and I couldn't say, oh, this part means such and such, and that part means such and such. It was just a different language, which only worked on one level. Okay, on one level, which was beyond the sort of mind level, which invents language to communicate or pictures. You know, it was just. It's a, when people talk about intuition, it's like that. You know it, but you can't put your finger on it. You can't sort of put it into words. You just know it. You just know, oh,
You
don't
just
go
know it.
there. You know, don't go there. Okay. Or it's this sort of thing. Okay. It's beyond the mind.
Yeah, I know exactly what that feels like. It's like, you know, for I might get up in the morning and I might drop something and pick it up and just see something in what I pick up, and that will change that whole outcome of my day. Or I might go, oh, okay, there's something coming through there, and I'm not going to go and do what I, you know, and that's kind of how I live my life. It's just kind of knowing, feeling,
That.
nothing intellectual.
Now you don't have to make sort of write down what you're going to do. You know, you there comes a state in
Flow
your life
state.
where you just do. Okay.
Yes,
Okay. You may
it's like a
still,
flow.
you still have to fill out your tax form and things. You know,
Yes,
like,
I have to do that as
you know,
well,
you
Jürgen.
can't get away from certain things, but the daily life is quite a fluid, non-thinking thing. You know,
Yeah.
we.
So Jürgen, I just like to brush over the out of body part as well, right? Because it seems, and anyway, from my experience, right, early on, I started having the out of body experiences, right, and I had the lucid dreams and the really, really vibrant, almost like classroom state dreams where I was being taught something. This was going on for years, right? It was like, you know, it started off in the out of body, very dramatic, you know, lucid dreams, and then being taught in these dream states. And it was almost like I was being prepared for something. But what I did notice is I still had an ego, right? There was still fear in my system. It had nothing to do with awakening or enlightenment. Okay. And maybe 6 or 7 years down the line, I started going through the awakening of consciousness. So consciousness awaking up through this form, the various different stages that we spoke about. And then a lot of all of that stuff just it just didn't interest me. I didn't care about it anymore. You know, meditation just felt so nice. There was no need for me to want to project anywhere or know anything or learn anything. So, yeah, go ahead, go ahead.
No, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, for example, also meditation becomes a sort of an act of awareness. You know,
Yeah.
you don't have to sit down and close your eyes. There was a stage I went through when I said, okay, I'm not going to meditate anymore. You know, what's the point? Because it's
It doesn't
already,
bring you anywhere.
yeah, you're in a state of unity consciousness. What are you meditating for? Okay. And yet I still do it, you know. I still like to find the space, but it hasn't got the significance you have when you start off. You know, you've got to meditate or things like that. And also, meditation should be something to do with pleasure. Should be a joyful experience. I always say, if people want to meditate, they do it from a point of gratitude. You know. And love, you know, because then the thoughts sort of don't have any significance because your heart sort of focuses on love, gratitude. Thoughts become totally immaterial. Then that is a good meditation because you are meditating out of joy.
Yeah.
And then you relax completely rather than sort of, light, light, light. And if you focus on the light, for example, like some people do, then to become the light. Okay? Don't sort of separate it from yourself.
Yeah.
And then this sort of kind of thing, meditation, it's a beautiful thing, you know. I love it. I love meditation. It's
Yeah. And it should be joyous, right? Your spiritual sadhana, it shouldn't be a chore. And I find a lot of people, I interact with a lot of people and they ask me about their practice and do I really have to do, 30 minutes twice a day? Can I not, they want to do it without doing the meditation, right? And I'm like, but for me, I always like I enjoyed it so much. I would like to, at one stage I was meditating 90 minutes in the morning, 60 minutes on my lunch break, 90 minutes before bed.
Yeah, I
And I
know.
did it because it felt so nice and it felt so good. And I just couldn't wait to sit down for my next meditation to see what would unfold during it. So, I mean, if you're not enjoying it,
No, if it becomes a chore when people are distracted by their thoughts and they can't get a handle on their thoughts and they're too by their thoughts, and they say, I've got to get rid of the thoughts. I need to meditate now, and then thoughts come back in, you know. And my attitude towards thoughts is be nice to your thoughts, you know, be kind to your thoughts. They're your kids, okay? Look after them, okay? Don't tell them to go away. If they want attention, they're probably hungry. Okay, so you have to give them a little bit of love and attention, you know, that's thoughts. And then eventually the thoughts don't bother you anymore. There's sort of like a train on the horizon, you know, you can pick them or you can leave them. And that's meditation, I think, you know, be nice to your thoughts, you know.
Very good. Jürgen, your work at the moment, right? I just want to just get to your latest book. Do you want to tell me a little bit about, because we just spoke about this channeling, right, of energy and music, and you're doing something similar with the work you're doing now, right? You have a friend who's a very well-known musician. He makes the music. You're creating these landscapes of the realities that you travel to in these out-of-body states that we're talking about, and you've put it into an illustration in this new book.
I've got on my website magic fantasy art. I did some virtual reality experiences, and they are designed with a friend of mine who did the music. He's also
Do you want to
meditating.
mention him?
Craig Proust. He's quite
Yeah.
well known. He does big features.
Oh, a lot of people know who he is. I actually use a lot of his music in my retreats and stuff. So everybody knows who he
He's
is. Yeah,
a big friend
the
of mine.
Devi Prayer is his famous
Yeah,
song.
Devi prayer. Yeah, oh God, I when I listened first to his Devi prayers, I had tears coming out of my eyes. I was so.
Yeah.
And then, when I first met him, telling him about it, he came. He said when I rang him, contacted him on Facebook, he said, "I'm just happened to be in Brighton. Why don't I come pop by? You know, I live in Worthing." And then he came to the door, and we just sort of fell into each other's arms. We were really good friends already, you know. And he said, anytime you want to do the music, you use anything you want, you know. And he's done some. I told him about a project I was going to do, and he said, "Yeah, I do the music for it, you know." And then when I started doing the project, I noticed his music was way beyond my abilities to do a video, so I left it. And then I started doing virtual reality, and I just found the right thing. I did an experience, and the music was spot on. Okay, and the experience was called Cosmic Consciousness, and the music was really sort of in sync with the pictures. And the reason I'm doing these virtual reality things, they may not be everybody's cup of tea, but there are certain spectral sort of fractal type of patterns, which bring you into the state. It's like a deep meditation into the state of consciousness. Okay, and that's why I do that, and people can listen to it and immerse themselves into it, you know. And I found that it's really important, but it's not for everybody, you know. Sometimes people don't like.
Well, Jürgen, when we were in Lumley Castle together, somebody had a VR headset, right? And I put the VR headset on, and all of a sudden, I had lost this reality, right? I was now having the experience of a virtual reality through these goggles, and I can see how this technology can sort of trigger something almost internally that would kind of give you the understanding of how these out-of-body states might work, right? Because all of a sudden you put the goggles on, you lose this reality, and you now have a new information stream coming into your field of awareness, right, that you can interact with. So this is what you're doing with these realities, right? These landscapes that you've configured them to fit with these virtual realities. Is that the VR headsets?
Yes, I want it to become a trigger, really, in people's minds.
Yes,
So
a catalyst,
yeah,
right?
you know, that
Yeah.
was the idea. And this visual images, the way I design the pictures for my book, for example, I want people to look at it, and when they look at the pictures, I want them to go a little bit further and imagine what is around the next corner, okay, of the picture. I want them to be so realistic that they quickly sort of lose their connection to the print, but become an inner picture, and then they may think, okay, I go a little bit further now in this picture. I wonder what's behind. That's why I made so many pictures. I want people, give people a trigger of, but
Yeah.
also I want it to be a documentary as well. I mean, there are some parts in the book which are quite dark because I wanted to give quite a broad spectrum of these other realities. And there are some parts where people, if they are not connected to the heart and just connected to certain negative emotions, I want to sort of write out what you know, your environment is like and things.
So if you share a belief with a group of people, and when you pass on, that you might end up in these darker realms, shared realities, a shared consensus
Yes,
reality.
because we do that in any case during our dreams or in our subconscious. And our subconscious, when we are fearful or when we are full of spite or hatred, you know, we
Yeah.
are already in those places. You know, there is no light, you know, there is no. So
Yeah.
basically, it's a mirror of
And
our reality.
I guess that even happens here, right? With the people we attract into our lives, right? How we are is that's our view of the world is what we attract, and yeah, we build that reality around ourselves and our belief.
That's right. That's right. So
Yeah.
we've got to be we've got to be aware and pay attention to how we're feeling and what we're giving out. Okay.
Yeah.
It's we have got to make decisions in what we want to put out and what we want to feed ourselves with, you know, and stuff like that. So that's a whole learning experience of being alive in this world, you know. So
Yeah.
all comes down to reality in the end, what
And
we do.
Jürgen, what I'll do is I'll link to all of your books. You've got a number of different websites, haven't you? You've got
Yes, I've got
Multidimensional Man. Yeah.
minute moment. Magic fantasy art is where I do my visual work. I mean, I sort of probably. I started some websites which I didn't really follow up, you know. I I wanted to do a website, Vistas of Infinity, but it's just too much work, you know.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
I'm sort of retiring, really.
I don't think that's going to happen, Jürgen.
But I'm sort of,
I think you'll just end up doing more work.
yeah, I'm addicted to making pictures. I can't stop,
Yeah.
you know. So that's the thing. I've got to do it. I've got various thoughts in my head. I would like to do a children's book, you know. I've got various other things. I want to do a comic. I would like to do a script for a movie. You know, I like to do all these things, but it's not enough time. You know, then you have to clear the garage.
Yeah. Well, I guess AI could help with a lot of that now, right? AI,
Does help a lot. Without AI, I wouldn't have been able to do it. And you can control it to a certain extent, which is beautiful. You know, before this, I did 3D using game engine tools to create 3D environments. But it's much more labor intensive than just doing a narrative. I literally, at some point, I've described the scenery of what I have experienced, and it came up with pictures. They were not accurate,
Wow.
but I could modify them. You know, I could. There are negative prompts you can put in what you don't want in it.
What you don't
There are
want.
positive prompts, and so you develop it. So each picture can take. They're done really quickly, in seconds. It's an amazing technology. And it's very similar to what's happening on the astral plane, where you bring
Yes.
data together, and basically AI is a massive database. Okay, and each data point can be combined with any other data point and create something totally new. And you can knit it together to anything you want, and it's a very powerful thing, you know. It's basically the astral level, the astral plane has come onto the
So
physical.
we're replicating it, right? We're replicating that database, that the Akashic records, right? We're bringing them it here through our computer, yeah, and then it's like a microcosmic version of that database.
And that's always, I always notice that. For example, everything is already happening on the astral plane. And I noticed in the 70s, I went to visit some really fantastic hotels on the astral plane. And I thought, oh God, I mean, you know, normally you go to a hotel, there's a room, there's a tub, there's a wardrobe, you know, things. But that hotel on the astral plane, that was a really beautiful environment. And then years later, they came up with the idea of boutique hotel, you know, themed hotels. That happened sort of 10 years after I first saw it on the astral plane, you know, and now you have incredible hotel experiences.
So a lot of the stuff in this reality, okay, somehow we are tapping into that astral, that Akashic record, right? In whatever, in dream states, in meditations, and people are then pulling that reality here as a thought packet and then creating it into a physical reality.
Yes. All
Yeah.
the ideas happening over there already.
Yes, all the good ideas.
Yeah,
That actually work.
the people who are inventors here, architects or sculptors,
Yeah.
they're already beavering away in their imagination, and the imagination is located on the astral plane, in the mental planes, you know, and then they gradually doing it, and they've got this feedback mechanism. They suddenly find, oh, this feels good, I'm doing the sculpture, and then it's modified on the astral plane. And so there is it's a loop over different
Yeah.
states of consciousness, and
Yeah.
until we create something. It's so incredibly beautiful. There are no border lines, you know, everything is sort of happening at once here. Yeah.
And everything is allowed, right? The creativity is just
Yeah.
endless,
And
endless.
when you come home and liberate yourself from your limitations, then anything is possible. You can. That is when our life really begins, when we get our unity consciousness. Suddenly, where do you want to start?
Wonderful, wonderful, Jürgen. Oh, fascinating conversation. I mean, for the I've had the biggest smile on my face for the whole duration of that conversation. Yeah, we should probably wrap up now. We're pushing on 2 hours. Jürgen, so I'm gonna link to all your websites, your books down below, in the description, and any of the people listening on Spotify and Apple on the podcast, there'll be a link to all of Jürgen's work if you want to find out more about him. And your new book. Do you want to just hold your book up again 1 second, Jürgen? Just
Elysium.
so this is Elysium.
It's called Official Odyssey of Life Eternal. I didn't want to call it afterlife because there's no such thing as afterlife. There's only life.
It's only life. Jürgen, thank you so much. It's been amazing. And thank you to everybody who tuned in and listened and viewed on YouTube. And thanks so much. Jürgen,
Gareth, so
thank you.
nice to talk.
Amazing.
Yeah,
Thank you.
we can
Thank
catch
you,
up
Jürgen.
and just having a chat, the two of us.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Jürgen.
Great. See you then.